Jamuna Tiravana Chati. Jamuna Tiravana Chati. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Jabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi jana bala bha giri varadhadi Gopi jana bala bha giri varadhadi Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tiravana Chadhi Jamuna Tiravana Chadhi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai O Vishnupad Paramahamsa Hari Vijaga Charaja Asta Tarasata Sisti Madhas Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda ki jai Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai Samvita Bhaktivarinda ki jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga Just leave it, it's good Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from text 2, chapter 29 Canto 4. Narada uvacha Purusham puranjanam vidyad Yad vyanakhyatma Yad vyak nad vyanakhyatmanak puram Ekadvi trichatus padam Bahupadam apadakam Narada uvacha Purusham puranjanam vidyad Yad vyanakhyatmanak puram Ekadvi trichatush padam Bahupadam apadakam Narada uvacha Purusham Paranjanam Vidyad Yadvyanakyatmanak Puram Ekadvi Tri Chatush Padam Bahupadam Apadakam Purusham Paranjanam Vidyad Yadvyanakyatmanak Puram Ekadvi Tri Chatush Padam Bahupada Padakam Narada Uvacha Purusham Puranjanam Vidyad Yadvanakyatmanak Puram Ekadvi Tri Chatush Padam Bahupadam Apadakam. Ladies. Narada Uvacha Purushanam Vidyad Yadvanaktyatmanak Puram Ekadvi Tri Chatush Padam Bahupadam Apadakam Narada Uvacha Purusham Paranjanam Vidyad Yadvanaktyatmanak Puram Paranjanam Vidyad Yadvanaktyatmanak Puram Ekadvi Tri Chatush Padam Narada Uvacha. Narada said, Purusham, the living entity, the enjoyer. Puranjanam, King Puranjana. Vidyat, one should know. Yat, inasmuch as. Vyanakti, he produces. Atmanaha, of himself. Puram, dwelling place. Eka, one. Dvi, two. Three. Chatupadam, with four legs. Bahupadam, with many legs. Apadakam, without legs. Translation, the great sage Narada Muni continued, you must understand that Puranjana, the living entity, transmigrates according to his own work into different types of bodies, which may be one-legged, two-legged, three-legged, four-legged, many-legged, and simply legless. Transmigrating into these various types of bodies, the living entity, as the so-called enjoyer, is known as Puranjana. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. How the spirit soul transmigrates from one type of body to another is nicely described here. The word ekapada, or one-legged, refers to ghosts. You may not know this, but Prabhupada writes, for it is said that ghosts walk on one leg. Did you know that? Ghosts walk on one leg. It is said. The word dvipada, meaning biped, refers to human beings.
When he is old and invalid, the human being is supposed to be a triped or three-legged because he walks with the help of a stick or some kind of cane. Of course, the word chatushpada refers to quadrupeds or animals. The word bahupada refers to those creatures who have more than four legs. There are many insects, such as the centipede, and also many aquatic animals that have many legs. The word apadaka, meaning without legs, refers to serpents. The name Puranjana indicates one who enjoys possessing different types of bodies. His mentality for enjoyment in the material world is accommodated by different types of bodies. End of purport. Narada uvacha purusham puranjanam vidyad yad vanaktyatmanak puram eka dvi tvi chatush padam bahupadam apadakam. Great sage Narada Muni continued, "You must understand that Puranjana, the living entity, transmigrates according to his own work into different types of bodies, which may be one-legged, two-legged, three-legged, four-legged, many-legged, or simply legless. Transmigrating into these various types of bodies, the living entity, the so-called enjoyer, is known as Puranjana." So this is the beginning of Narada's explanation of the allegory, because the previous verse was King Prachinibari requesting Narada to explain it because he said he couldn't understand it because he was too much attached or contaminated in consciousness by fruitive activity, and so he couldn't understand. So Narada is explaining. Purusham. Purusha, in one sense, it's a misnomer because there are these two divisions, Purusha and Prakriti, just like chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita. Purusha, Prakriti. Kshetra, Kshetra, Gya. Gyanam, Gyayam. Matter and spirit, or spirit and matter. Purusha, Prakriti. So the living entity is in the category of Purusha, but in the imitation sense of the Parama Purusha, trying to be the enjoyer of Prakriti, because the living entity, in addition to being this, is this. Bewildering position of the living entity. While in the category of spirit, the living entity is also para-prakriti. Prakriti in the sense of enjoyed by the Purusha. So, personality Godhead, he's the Purusha. Like Purusha avatars, or Purusha sukta, or Purusha. The forms of the Lord, Lord Vishnu, who's the creator of the creation, and therefore the enjoyer of the creation. And then the living entities are running around trying to be the enjoyers of the creation, in forgetfulness of the enjoyer and the creator of creation. Imitation Purushas. Nice example from the 10th canto, Bhagavatam, is Pondraka. You know who is Pondraka? Pondraka is... He was claiming that he was Vishnu. Not the first one to claim, and not the last one to claim. But he pasted on two extra arms and said that he's Vishnu. And he sent a messenger, a Brahmana messenger, to Dwarka to instruct Krishna immediately desist from calling yourself or allowing others to call you Vishnu, because I'm Vishnu and you're a pretender Vishnu. So you better stop or I'm going to come and destroy you. Krishna laughed and said, you can go back and tell your master, Pondraka. He doesn't have to come here to destroy me. I'll go to him and destroy him. Carry the message. I'll be there shortly. And Krishna destroyed him and his father. Excuse me, and his friend, the king. So then the son wanted to get back at Krishna. It's a long story. So when Krishna destroyed Pondraka, the first thing he did was the Sudarshan Chakra, cut off the extra two arms, because they were just pasted on anyways. And then he severed some of the other limbs from the rest of his body, like his head, with his Sudarshan Chakra, and that was the end of Pondraka. So, but Pondraka is the classic imitation Purusha, because there is a Purusha. Lord Vishnu is the Purusha. In the category, the six categories of avatars, that's Purusha avatars. Those forms of the Lord that descend in this world for the purpose of creation, Purusha avatars. But the living entity is sometimes also called Purusha. But he's the Pondraka Purusha, imitation Purusha, imitating the position of being the enjoyer of Prakriti. But that's the material condition. It's the essence of the material condition. Trying to enjoy Krishna's energy separate from Krishna. Well, that's breaking the law. It's illegal. It's punishable by the laws of nature. And the punishment of the laws of nature may look like a reward. The reward is described in this verse. One gets a body. The word that's used in the verse is Pura. Pura. Pura means city. Like Hastina, Pura. Pura means city. So the city, that is this body, the Pura, the place where the Purusha resides, the imitation, the Pondraka Purusha, resides in a Pura. So in the allegory, there's the kingdom of King Puranjana that has so many gates, like nine. It's like the body has different openings, entry ports into the body, the eye, without listing them. So then there's soldiers inside and so many things. So the allegory will be explained. But the city, Pura, is the body, the place in which the soul wishing to be the enjoyer resides. Just paralleling what's being said here by Narada with Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the first verse is Krishna's being asked by Arjuna what is Purusha and Prakriti, and Kshetra and Kshetragya, mentioned already. It's matter and spirit. It's Sankhya philosophy. Arjuna is asking Krishna more details of Sankhya philosophy, that which was already described in chapter 2. And then again, very succinctly in chapter 7, there's these Bina Prakritir Ashtada, separated eightfold material energies, and aside from that, there's Aparemi Trastvanyam Prakritim Vidive Param, Para Prakriti, living entity. So chapter 2, chapter 7, now an expanded version in chapter 13. All of that is Sankhya, analysis of matter and spirit. So he's doing that here. Narada is doing, But what the answer that Krishna gives to the first one he chooses to identify is the field of activities and the knower of the field of activities. So, kshetra, the field of activities, like kurukshetra, kshetra, field. So the field of activities. He says, idam shariram kaunteya. Because of our prasadam prayer, we all know what sharira means. Sharira avidya jao. This sharira, the body, is a lump of ignorance. Avidya. It's not very complimentary. In case you didn't pick up on it. Sharira avidya. So, idam shariram. This body, O son of Kunti. Kshetram iti abhidiyate. Abhidiyate. It is to be known that the body is the kshetra, the field of activities. So same as Purim, same idea. The field of activities. The body is the field of activities. And one who knows the field of activities is, one who knows this body, occupies the body, the soul that's conscious within this body, he's a knower, that's kshetra gya. So where does the Purim come from? What Narada is saying is where the field of activities or the place of residence of the soul, the Pondraka Purusha, individual, yad vyanakti atmanak puram. Yad is a pronoun. It refers to the Purusha known as Paranjana Vidyad, you should know, yad, that vyanakti. Vyanakti means he produces. So how does the living entity produce bodies? Answer, he doesn't. Rather, material nature produces bodies. Material nature produces bodies. Krishna indicates that in Bhagavad Gita. Prakrite kriyamanani. Kriya, what's the meaning of kriya? To do or activity, like kriya yoga. Kriya, activity. So, prakrite kriyamanani. But here the living entity, yad vyanakti, he is said to produce, but he produces indirectly. And that's explained nicely in the purport. His mentality for enjoyment in the material world is accommodated by different types of bodies. That is, prakriti makes an arrangement for the living entity according to two things, guna and karma. Propensity for enjoyment, that's the guna part. Some people like to enjoy in goodness, some people in passion, some people in ignorance. And they're all coverings of the soul. But it's that what's shared by all of them is independent of the Supreme. Maybe a little more recognition, but independent of the Supreme. Mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. That's the desire to enjoy types. But it's all desire to enjoy independently. So they're all, that's the Purusha, Pondraka Purusha program, or the Paranjana program, imitation enjoyer program. Because of that imitation enjoyment disposition or desire to be an enjoyer, the living entity, quote, creates or produces Purims, bodies. Prakriti provides the body. The living entity can't create bodies independent of Prakriti. Forget it. Just listening to Prabhupada doing his boxing match with the scientists just this morning, a little recording, and he was one of the devotees in the morning walk. It was Giriraj Maharaj, was saying, there's a scientist in town in Mumbai, and he's saying like this: we don't know where the elements of creation have come from, but we know that we don't need God to explain where they came from. And Prabhupada replied, rascal. And the rascal dumb is from Bhagavad Gita. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. So literally he's thinking that this vimudha, not just mudha, but vimudha scientist, based on ahankara, is thinking, you know, God is out of the picture. If God is out of the picture, then what do you have left? Well, you have material nature. So material nature is producing. Material nature is producing the Purims, which is true. But without the assistance of God, that's not true. So you know, it begs the question, if material nature is doing everything, where did material nature come from? And where did the laws governing material nature come from? And who oversees those laws? What's a law without a law enforcement? And the answer is, it's just inherent in matter. Like, so you propose that God exists and God creates matter and the laws that govern matter and oversees the laws that govern matter. That's your idea. So primordial God is your idea. Our idea is primordial is matter and the laws that govern matter. That's God. And don't ask me where did the laws that govern matter and matter come from, because they're primordial. Just like you say, don't ask me where did God come from, because he is the basis of everything. So that's your religion. My religion is, and this is, what's it called? One of the six doctrines. It might be Vaisheshika. Well, they say that this doctrine, based on, because it's from the study of the Vedas, misinterpreted, just Krishna disappears or Vishnu or God disappears, and primordial is the atom or matter, that's the smallest component of existence. Bear in mind, as I'm speaking here, this is atheism, so don't buy into it. Buyer beware. And the study of the Vedas is to help the wise, learned person to understand matter is the basis of everything. And from matter, everything comes. And if it doesn't come from matter, then it doesn't come. And matter is primordial. Just as your idea of God is primordial, matter is primordial, and the laws governing matter, they're primordial, and you don't need somebody to govern the laws of matter because they're just primordial. And matter interacts with matter according to fundamental laws. That's it. That's reality. And there's nothing more than that. That's their view. That's a doctrine. Just a little historical note. when Jiva Goswami was a young boy, his father was one of three brothers, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and Anupam. His father, Anupam, died when he was very young. So he had to stay at home till he matured and grew up, and his mother then gave permission, yes, you can go stay with your uncles in Vrindavan, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. So he was ready to go. And he went first to Navadvip in order to see the places of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Because he had, there are accounts that say, as a small infant, he was present when Lord Chaitanya was present, when Rupa and Sanatan and his brother, his father Anupam, first met Lord Chaitanya. Other accounts, biographical descriptions say he never had Lord Chaitanya's association in physical presence. So he went to Navadvipa in order to see the place where Lord Chaitanya performed his pastimes. When he went there, lo and behold, there's Lord Nityananda. So Jiva Goswami met Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda took Jiva Goswami, at Jiva Goswami's request, to the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes and explained them. And what an ecstatic experience that was. It's recorded in Navadvip Dham Mahatmya. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written that book. And at the end, after this ecstatic experience, it's wonderful, short, but very wonderful literature, glorifying the places and disclosing some of the glories of Navadvip Dham, Mayapur Dham, Nityananda then gave his blessing to Jiva Goswami to go to Vrindavan and take the association of Rupa and Sanatan. He said, but before you go, go to Benares where Vidya Vachaspati resides. That is the brother of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and he will train you, before you go to Vrindavan, he will train you in the six darshans, one of those six I just mentioned, which is the atomic theory. It's not a new one, modern science, atomic theory. It was existed since, you know, the Vedas existed, or ancient times, where the idea is all there is matter and the laws that govern matter and there's nothing else. Mechanistic view of reality. He learned the darshans and learned the refutations of the darshans before he went to Vrindavan. And, you know, he wasn't an ordinary fellow. He was Jiva Goswami. Brilliant. Brilliant scholarship from a person who had also had Lord Chaitanya's association and was a brilliant scholar. So he learned what incorrect understanding of the Vedas sounded like in, you know, in the systematic way that it was presented, atheism systematically presented, not the garden variety, but, you know, systematic atheism. This is what they say, and here's the refutation. And then he went to Vrindavan. So, having not had that systematic training in atheism or atheistic views, Prabhupada's disciples had not been, you know, purposefully exposed to all of that. Prabhupada would, from time to time, take one or another off the shelf, look at it, poke holes in it, and present the Vedic alternative. And modern science is one of those six. It's not modern, it's ancient. It's at least the fundamentals. Once Prabhupada said, there's no new philosophy. Anything that is being said, anything that has in recent times been said, it's just a mix of these previous teachings that great rishis and munis have compiled and systematically presented. They may be a little eclectic, take, you know, some from here and something from there and something from there and put them in a blender and come out with a mix. But the elements are from these six. And there are devotees that have taught them. So there are textbooks where ISKCON devotees have explained these six darshans, and here's what it is, and here's where the holes are, and here's the alternative, here's the correct understanding. So what Narada is doing is he's, in a very quick way, in a summary way, he's presenting two things. He's presenting what the misunderstanding is. Vyanakti, the living entity creates the city in which he lives, in the Paranjana allegory, but actually it's Prakriti creates the body that we inhabit, and it's based upon our two things, our guna and karma, our desire for enjoying Prakriti, as Purushas like to enjoy Prakriti, and karma, the bondage, and actually both tendencies for enjoyment according to guna, it's different than karma, but they're both forms of bondage. Tendencies for enjoyment is a bondage, and being propelled by our previous karma to the reactions of how the configuration of the material energy is going to come at us, that's karma. That then creates the kshetra, the field of activity, or the body, and the other configurations of matter that surround the body, you know, what, how we experience life. Then he takes the second half of the verse and details a little bit about species, or not exactly species, but categories of embodiments. So one-legged, two-legged, three-legged, four-legged, multi-legged, and no legs. And Prabhupada has explained that in the purport. It doesn't mean, it doesn't explicitly say in any case that those that have no legs, like a snake, are worse off or in lower position than a ghost that has one leg. Just different categories, and two legs and three legs and four legs and many legs. But the variety that's there is connected to guna and karma. And it's through the agency of guna karma that vyanakti, the living entity, creates his own destiny. In that sense, we create. But not in the other sense, kartaham iti manyate, that we do it ourselves. We create, okay, I'll make a body like that. We don't choose who our mother and father is and what species we're born in exactly. We choose by our guna and karma, by what's back there. We're making choices of what our next embodiment is based on the choices that we're making today, the varieties of ways that we're exercising free will. In that sense, we're producing the Purams, or the embodiments. Chetram iti abhidiyate. One last thing is Prabhupada is, it's very similar to the language that's being used here. I'll read what's said here. transmigrating into these various types of bodies, living entity, as the so-called enjoyer is known as Paranjana. Transmigrating into these various types of bodies is different language than vyanakti. Vyanakti is you produce, and the language of the translation is you transmigrate into various species of life. So here's Prabhupada's explanation. The various species of life are already there. We go the other direction. In analyzing the theory of extinction of species, Prabhupada poo-poos the idea of extinction of species. Because species are there by God's creation in so many numbers and varieties. So who can extinguish, or is it, unless God extinguishes, it can't be. By our misuse of material nature, we can't extinguish anything, create or extinguish. But rather, there are, he gives the example when you are deciding where you will reside. Okay, so we're in Chicago. And according to one's guna and karma, if you have sufficient good credit or capacity, you can live in a place like this and a place like that or a place like that. The residential quarters are already there. And according to your capacity, you live here, you live there, you live another place. He uses that example, what's conventional, how people live in the world. It compares that to how it works in material nature. The apartments are already there. The forms of life are already there, as what Prabhupada is saying here. Or the verse, transmigrating into these various types of bodies. So the types of bodies are already there. And the soul is transmigrating from this one to that one to another one according to guna and karma. So in that sense, he's not creating the situation. The situations are already there. But he's moving from this one to that one based upon his capacity. So I may desire to live in a very posh place, neighborhood or apartment or home or something, and I don't have the capacity, I can't. I may desire to have a demigod's body or a something situation, and it's not going to happen if I don't have the capacity, if I don't have the credential. So earning credential or diminishing credential is what, at least in the human form of life, goes on. The other forms of life, it's just automatic into the next species, automatically. The soul isn't accruing karma. The tiger is not accruing karma by killing an animal and eating the animal. He's impelled by the modes of nature, by the embodiment that he has to do that. Like every now and then, Jitendra gets a cat because the cat eats mice. We have to send the cat to cat school to go, here's how you catch mice. They know how to do it, and so we get a cat to keep the mice population under control. Because that's what's food for them. But when we come to the human form of life, intelligence, the covering of the soul is less. Intelligence is more developed, sometimes not so developed, but more developed. And with that developed consciousness and intelligence, there's freedom of choices, and the freedom of choices then brings responsibility. With facility comes responsibility. And then, so one can go to a higher, one can stay in the same, one can go to a lower position. And that's in the sense where vyanakti, but the positions, they're already fixed. There's already demigods, there's already human species and there's already lower species. The apartments are already there. The Purims are already there. So it's two ways of understanding the same thing. We transmigrate into that which already exists based upon how the Puranjana, the Paundraka Purusha form of life, lives their life. Because notice these, well, except for the centipedes and the snakes, the other ones are human. You know, the ghost, at least the person becomes the ghost, and then the two legs and the three legs. That's human species, and then multi-legs and no legs, the lower species. So from the human form of life, we're choosing our next destiny. But the destinies are already there. The facilities are there. We're choosing which of them we're eligible for. That's the principle of transmigration. He's explaining the Puranjana name. It's the living entity trying to be an enjoyer. And so he creates or produces different Purims or situations where he then can, you know, does his thing, tries to be an enjoyer. It's a long chapter. The allegory, the explanation of the allegory is very detailed. You'll be learned scholars by the time you finish this chapter. Okay, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Jitendriya. You're looking them up? Darshans. Excuse me? I don't know. Yeah, it was taught in Mayapur and it was put into a spiral bound book. It was also taught in Vrindavan. They probably used spiral bound books too. So it's what the doctrine is and what the refutation, where the holes are. Here comes. Yeah, go right ahead. Yeah, hold it up. Because the proclivity, okay, for enjoyment. By bhakti, transforming lust to love, the tendency to be an independent enjoyer to being enjoyed by Krishna. Devotional service. That's the medicine. The proclivity antidote. Someone else? Yes. Good thing you're here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. The role of subtle body.
The role of subtle body.
In transmigration.
I'm listening.
Does it differ in human species to lower forms of life?
I missed the last. The role of the subtle body in transmigration, then you said something I didn't understand.
I mean, does it differ in human species and
is
the
it different in human species? The subtle body, it's not species specific at all. Here, you know, this is keeping it simple. The subtle body is mind, intelligence, and false ego. Mind is very strong, and mind is the repository of sense impressions. So based upon sense impressions stored in the mind, the mind, intelligence, and false ego, when the, let's say, a dog's body, impelled by the modes of nature, it's discussed in chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita, Purusha Prakatisto hi Bhunte Prakriti Jangunan. Bhunte, because of the desire, this propensity, Bhunte, because of the desire to enjoy, when the soul gets the body of a dog, he behaves like a dog. He wags his tail and chews on bones and barks and does dog things. Same soul in a subtle body may be in the body of a demigod, and he does demigod things, and so on. Embodiment acts, and so that's the gross body. But then the subtle body is this repository of... Okay, hold it upright. Yeah, it stops the ring back. The subtle body has this big warehouse of subtle impressions, but it's, you know, very, very refined system of data filing. Subtle. So that, and that accompanies the soul, carries the soul to the next situation, next situation. So we, Prabhupada gives this example. In one's dream, I'm flying in the sky. That means, in a previous life, I was flying in the sky. Not, the, you know, in this life, but in a previous life, and that impression is there. And that impression, stored in the mind, is combined with something else that's stored in the mind. You splice them together, and in the dream, you're flying in the sky. So it's a bird and a human, but it's the same subtle body, because the impression is stored there. So it gives the subtle body experience. But that's not the only element, the subtle mind that stores impressions of previous life. There's these other factors. See if there's someone else. Is it someone else like to speak something? Okay.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Simple question. I was wondering if someone, I've heard that the Vedas contain everything.
The Vedas contain everything. Like how many particles of sand there are in the Sahara Desert. Like that?
Well...
No.
I don't know. Maybe that's not relevant for the Vedas.
Yeah.
But everything that would be knowledge-oriented.
Yeah.
I was wondering if the species were listed.
I couldn't hear you last part.
Those, what is it, 8.4 million? If those different bodies were listed in any of the Vedas? The different vehicles.
8.4 million species.
Are they listed in the Vedas anywhere, Maharaj?
No. It just mentions how many from each category.
I see.
That's identified, but not, you know, where's the whole list? Not there. How many particles of sand in the Sahara Desert is also not there.
Based on what you were saying right now, Maharaj, about dreams, I was thinking, how much weight do we give to, you know, sometimes you hear devotees have dreams where Srila Prabhupada is speaking to them.
Oh, that's an easy answer.
Prabhupada said, it's a test of patience and tolerance. Take it that some mercy is being extended. How fortunate, some mercy is being extended. Don't place too much merit in the detail and try to, you know, what does this mean? What does that mean? Prabhupada said in a dream that I should something or other. That was going on during Prabhupada's life, and you know, Prabhupada said in a dream, and Prabhupada said, I never said. So, like that. Yes. Yes. Yeah, very dangerous. Okay. Yes. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I would like to know what is an explanation of how the subtle body is dissolved.
How which?
The subtle body.
Subtle body, okay.
Is dissolved.
Dissolved.
Yes.
How the subtle body is dissolved?
By the devotional service.
Oh, I don't know. Kapila Dev says it happens. It's good enough for me. And it is, you want to know the technology?
I mean, I'm not saying that technology, but the symptoms, because it's...
Oh, the symptom is the mind goes to Krishna. So what does material mean? Absence of Krishna. There's no such thing as absence of Krishna. The one who sees absence of Krishna or thinks absence of Krishna, that's material. So the material mind is an asset given to the Paundraka Purusha so he can think independently of Krishna. He thinks, you know, splendorous thoughts or terrible thoughts or all kinds of thoughts in the absence of Krishna. So that's dissolved by the alternative, thinking of Krishna. So the material mind is dissolved. So behind the material mind, there's spiritual mind. In order for matter to move, there has to be an animating force behind the matter. So the soul also has thinking, feeling, willing in relation to Krishna. So thinking, feeling, willing in relation to Krishna dissolves thinking, feeling, and willing separate from Krishna, the material mind. The covering is removed. Dissolved. The elements go back to their warehouse. Like it says in Ishopanishad, that the air of life go with the totality of air. The mind goes to the totality of mind. Maha mind. It's a material energy that covers the soul. It's a facility to think, feel, and will separately from Krishna. It's dissolved. Does that help?
Yes, helps. Sometimes I ask myself how the pure devotee is liberated, but he still has the material body.
Well, but his body becomes spiritualized. Material body becomes spiritualized. So that it acts spiritually, that is, for others and for the pure devotee. The body of the pure devotee in contact with an ordinary living entity becomes spiritualized, the living entity. And similarly, the body of the pure devotee acts as an agency of service to Krishna. That's the spiritualized, the mind, the senses.
Yes, but the elements are still
What?
The elements are like earth and water.
But the elements, where do they come from?
They're from Krishna.
Yeah, so they act spiritually. If you like to ponder this deeply, I suggest you read chapter 87 of Canto 10. Because the question you're raising is a deep question. It's the longest chapter in the whole 10th canto. It's a discussion between the personified Vedas and the four Kumaras on the question you're asking. It's profound. Your head will spin. I invite you.
Okay. Thanks.
But that's the subject. And the essence is, because the elements are connected with Krishna, with the source, when used in relation to the source, they act spiritually. It's a consciousness issue. If the consciousness is in relation to Krishna, or Krishna consciousness, they act spiritually. And then they're no longer acting in a deluding manner, as material energy commonly acts. They act spiritually. So then they don't act in the same way as material elements normally act, at least from our experience normally. The place becomes Vaikuntha. You've heard that description before.
Yes.
What happens if everyone becomes Krishna conscious? This place will become Vaikuntha. Well, how can it be Vaikuntha? Because here's these elements of matter, earth, water, fire, air. Is it Vaikuntha, earth, water, fire, air? Or what goes on in Vaikuntha? But this place becomes Vaikuntha. It acts fully spiritually when the consciousness is fully spiritual. It acts spiritually. It acts to liberate. Just contact matter and it acts to liberate. Matter that's fully used in Krishna service. Like the tongue, like the ear, like kartals, like, you know, mridanga, like the deities, like prasadam, like the Bhagavatam. What is it, material elements wise? It's some trees and some pigments and some cotton and... How is it liberating? It acts differently when it's in fully in relation to Krishna. Although you can look at it the other way. It's just matter. It acts differently. So the consciousness behind one's activities is the liberating component, then Krishna's reciprocation. It acts differently. He has this energy act like that energy. Or that energy act like this energy. So it's Krishna's behind the whole show. And then there's our consciousness and our relationship with Krishna. It acts differently. The elements can act in a liberating way. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Another one. Go ahead.
Yesterday you mentioned how spiritual happiness is eternal, in contrast to material happiness.
Material happiness.
Yes. And I would like to know, for example, in festivals, we experience happiness. It's easier. We are big kirtans, so many, everyone is in the mood in a different, they don't have to work, no? So that they can focus on the activities.
Sure.
So we experience happiness, but then we have to, everyone goes back to their daily life. And so what aspects of that happiness is really spiritual? And it's not just a happiness because of the environment that the devotees create in order to facilitate the taste of practitioners to engage in bhakti.
Here's a short answer. It's a mix. It's a mix because our consciousness is a mix. We're attracted to this, and on the ultimate platform, we're attracted to Krishna. And Krishna's there, and so that's the real uplifting thing. But let's take the difference between kirtan and japa. One's easier, one's more difficult. But it's the holy name and the holy name. So we're attracted to, there's a circumstance, we're attracted to the social interaction part and the musical part, especially when it's done very nicely and it makes it easy. It's the same holy name, it's just, it's a mix. But it doesn't mean because it's a mix that, you know, the music is just material. Because it's in relation to Krishna, it spiritualizes. So then everything is dependent upon consciousness. The consciousness of the musician, the consciousness of the hearer of the music. But it assists our elevation of consciousness, although it's a mix. And, you know, same with the festival example. But it's not that those elements are material, because they're in relation to Krishna. They're acting spiritually. So that consciousness that is experienced by the festival goer, that's not material. Although it may be covered, it's a permanent asset for that soul. The purification. Also, the covering may come again, and I go back to my day to day, and that same experience isn't, you know, accessible. But it's the from the spiritual perspective, it's a permanent asset. So it's consciousness is the factor, the variable. How to the extent to which we're extending our consciousness to Krishna. So the super important is how we do our day-to-day chanting. Super important. Our consciousness touching Krishna. The sound of Krishna's name. And super important is how we receive the message of the scripture. You know, the time that you spend hearing and studying, reading, how your consciousness is touching Krishna. Not just how much you know and how learned you become, but so that can also be a mix. But just keep going, and the purification continues. And gradually it becomes steady, from unsteady to steady. And gradually that becomes ecstatic, and gradually that becomes love. The material influence diminishes and the spiritual influence increases as purification continues to progress. The original consciousness of the soul is restored. Then it's not circumstantial anymore. It's just ecstatic. Festival, no festival.
Yes, like the Goswamis, La Raghuna Das Goswami, he can taste.
Yeah.
Prasadam.
Like that. Okay. Yes.
Due to the material nature of the body, like I'm going to speak for myself as a very personal question.
Personal question.
That there are many times, due to the limitations, there's certain care that needs to be taken for the body. And while at the same time there's certain demands of services, and I would like to understand better, because I feel sometimes mostly inclined like the opportunity for this level of service may not come again, and we to just push the body or to know that even though there are the limitations or certain things are not good, to forget that and just to be able to have that opportunity to serve. So is that a good thing, like, because I mean it may mean like the body may die at some time faster or what, but how to balance the two?
On the one hand, but on the other hand, something can be said on both sides. I just keep it real simple and say, extend yourself but don't break. So extending beyond capacity, you know, probably all of us have some familiarity with that territory. And if the mode is always beyond my capacity, that's a formula for breaking down. But so to do that sometimes helps increase your capacity. On the other hand, meaning it's the body is saying, whoa, slow down. You need some, you know, we need some rest and relax time. You need that. And enthusiasm is saying, go, 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 go. I'm very familiar with that, those two different voices. And there's happiness and there's spiritual energy that comes from doing things that they're very pleasing to Krishna, and you like doing those things that are very pleasing to Krishna, and capacity increases. There's a time to do less of that and more of the rejuvenation activity. So, and then there's the balance. Not too much of this and the balance is good. Not all the time doing more than what your body is telling you, you know, stop. Or There's I've had discussions about this with others, and something that comes up from time to time in those discussions is the Old Testament saying that says there's a time for all things, there's a season for all things. There's a song about it, but he can sing it for you probably. That's another thing. I'm thinking that, you know, there's a time for doing more, and there's a time for rest and relax, and there's a time for nice balance. Just, you know, be very regulated. So, ideal is just be very regulated. And by being very regulated, your capacity will increase. Just, you know, because of focus, because of being rightly situated. Long term, capacity will naturally increase. But there are times for extending beyond capacity, not just because I like, because there's necessity. So I do, because there's necessity. And then there are times that's good to have some time where it's just very quiet. It's not even, you know, it's just quiet.
and reflective and rejuvenating and restoring, as there are some times when it's over here. But largely in the middle. But there are times when it's, and it's fine. And I probably a number of us seated here can think back of times that were most ecstatic, and some of the times that were most ecstatic were times that we were just extending and extending, and Krishna gave strength, and it was really ecstatic. Beyond, it was very clear. It was beyond. It wasn't our energy or something like that. It was just Krishna was sustaining. But regulation is norm. That's good. That's something to aim for. Something that it's just sustainable over time. And then I can give full attention, my mandate should be, give full attention to each of the things that I'm doing, and that way capacity will increase. So that goes like that. Take the example of Raghunath Das Goswami, and what he did was started out kind of normal and it just went to superhuman. So he wouldn't have gotten there if he hadn't, you know, pushed. Bhaktitirtha Swami described that his life was, in his words, always on the edge. Some people like being, you know, in that zone where you're in a risky territory beyond what you should, you know, normally be doing. He loved to live in that zone. That was his own expression. Always lived on the edge. So some people have the stamina and the equilibrium to do that. And some people have it more than other people have it. Some people have it less than other people have it. So you have strong stamina. So it's just Krishna has gifted you with that. Stay largely in the balance and, you know, maybe you'll be able to do more at times, but try to keep it sustainable. Okay. Last question.
Hey, Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I want to understand more about the term.
Speak slowly. I'm half deaf. Just think of that like that. Speak slowly and clearly.
The term kshetra, body is mentioned as the field of activity.
Fruitive activity. That's
the field of activity. The body is referred to as kshetra.
Body is a field of activity. Got it.
I just want to understand a little more about this term kshetra and what is the significance of, like, Arjuna asking this.
What's the difference between?
The significance of Arjuna specifically asking this question, like, what is kshetra, and then the answer given. So what is
this? It's Sankhya. It's Sankhya. I mean, so what's the benefit of Sankhya? Be clear. Materialists aren't clear. As far as they're concerned, there's only one thing. But Sankhya makes it clear. There's two things, matter and spirit. You look at the detail of the Krishna's response and it becomes clear. There's the elements. He gives the list of the 24 elements. Then he gives other things that are the mixing of those 24 elements and says all of this is the field of activities. Note that consciousness is not there. Consciousness is distinct. Consciousness isn't a product of elements and mixing of elements. The soul is not a product, you know, the self is not a product of. So that's the purpose of it. More detailed explanation of that. We're distinct. Same as the, you know, why Krishna presented it in the second chapter. Before Arjuna could
get it straight what his duty was, there's some fundamental understanding of Sankhya had to be there. You're in this category over here. And you're concerned about the mixing over there. But this is who you are. What your duty is over here, not just determined by that over there, or your sensibilities of what's that over there. And then, and then it goes progressively. The individual soul and the Supreme Soul. So that's right very the beginning of, there's two knowers, Kshetragya Chapimam Vidhi Sarva Shetri Shubharata. There's two knowers. So the soul and the Supreme Soul. And then there's a relationship. But it has nothing to do with this stuff over here. It's the soul, the Supreme Soul, and the relationship. You may use this stuff in service to the Supreme Soul because it's part, it's from him. But the relationship is with him. That's the reason. It's presented again. Third time in Bhagavad Gita. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.